Your name?
My name is Ron Harris.
Ron Harris, Thursday morning I was reading the Washington Post, and I came across an article entitled, DC Group Will End Needle Exchange. And it begins with these sentences. The leading provider of clean needles to drug addicts in the district to help stem the spread of AIDS plans to shut its doors by the end of the month, officials said Wednesday, in the city that has the highest HIV/AIDS prevalence rate in the country. Michael Rain, the president of the Board of Prevention Works, said dwindling private donations, delays in city funds, and high turnover of top managers of the nonprofit agency in recent years were among the factors that led to the decision to close February 25th. As a native Washingtonian, someone who has both worked at Prevention Works, the organization we're discussing here, and has worked closely on issues surrounding poverty as well as HIV/AIDS in the District of Columbia, I was wondering if you could share some of your thoughts.
First of all, there's enough blame to go around of what's happening at Prevention Works. You know, you mentioned an article said that Michael, or the guy in charge of the board, said delay them city funds, you know, from the city. You know, everybody has to take the part they played in what's happening at Prevention Works. You know, some of what was said in the article about management, true. You know, or saying about city funds being delayed, true. But I'm a member of the CPG, that's HIV Community Planning Group, and we prioritize populations every year for the most need for HIV services. And IV drug users are one of the populations that we prioritize. And so if that's a priority in this city, you know, to fight the epidemic, which is 3%, just give money to organizations that are doing frontline work with IV drug users, that the city should have been, should have had more oversight on what's happening on the front lines and dealing with the population that we're talking about. They give money to organizations, you know, and say Prevention Works, for example, and they stated in an article or something about, you know, high turnover at the top. But if you see these red flags or that they are in danger, why don't the city, which is their money, which comes from, you know, CDC, why don't they get involved about what's happening to this population if they're really serious about fighting the HIV epidemic in this city with the population of IV drug users?
I think that if a population has 1% or more infected with HIV/AIDS or AIDS, it's considered to be a generalized and severe epidemic.
Right.
As you mentioned, it's 3% or more in the District of Columbia. Can you talk about what exactly does this mean, and who is it that is infected?
It's hard to get anyone in the city to talk about. The CDC considers anything over 1% an epidemic. It's hard to get people in the city to mention the word epidemic. You know, it's very hard to get them to say the words out of their mouth. The folks that are the challenges facing the folks, and I'm gonna talk about IV drug users. They're a marginalized population, you know, and then they bring all the other baggage that goes along with being an IV drug user. You know, returning citizens, unemployment, housing, and the whole gamut of social ills. And these are the folks that are out there in the community. You know, it's more to than just giving folks clean needles, which I think is a good thing. You know, giving them bleach, you know, to clean their needles, which is a good thing. Giving them condoms, which is a good thing. What Prevention Works did, it went to the next level of not just, you know, doing quote unquote social services. Okay, we knew with the harm reduction approach, you know, is that how can we get a person to use safely and protect themselves sexually, and in turn, they're protecting their partners and the community. And so it's more than just giving someone clean needles and condoms, you know, until we start getting folks to realize that, you know, the social ills, all the things I mentioned before, housing, unemployment, these things, that all this stuff is intertwined, tied together, and we have to start dealing with it, not in silos, but holistically. We have to deal with all these issues until we take that approach, which is a harm reduction approach. The city is just like spinning its wheels, you know. That's why I question, you know, how committed is this city into fighting HIV among IV and other drug users?
If this many people were infected west of Rock Creek Park, if it was a wealthier, whiter folks who were victimized by this disease, would the governmental response be different?
Definitely. You know, I believe that a community can sustain itself if given the proper resources. That IV drug users, if given the proper resources, you know, can, what Prevention Work was doing, and it's been around for 12 years, and I've been knowing about them for years and worked with them for years, dealing with frontline grassroots, you know, I call them, you know, the IV drug users that folks don't see. You know, they're hard to reach, that, you know, they don't go to the community meetings, they don't go to ANC meetings. These are the folks that are hard to reach. That's who Prevention Works reached out to. But if that community was given proper resources around Narcan, you know, Narcan is something that some other cities do, is that they teach you is when someone overdoses, you know, the paramedic comes and they shoot the Narcan in them, they immediately recover. Some other cities, you know, are teaching their IV drug users this training and skill to have Narcan with them all the time, because people who do not use drugs, IV drug users, and when someone ODs, say, up in the oil joint, you know, who's going to be there? Another IV drug user. Or they also teach family members, because most likely the person might be at home when they, you know, shoot drugs. A family member knows about Narcan, you know, how to use Narcan, you know. So it bothered me that Prevention Works is closing. In this region, Prevention Works is the granddaddy of needle exchange. You know, it was started on a haphazard budget, you know, because at the time, you know, you couldn't use federal money to do needle exchange in the city. So it had kind of like spin off from Whitman Walker. And you had some dedicated folks who put a lot of work in to, you know, starting needle exchange in this city. For the last couple of years, you know, what I've been seeing is that, you know, the city did not have the commitment, although they gave the money, you know, and for me, there's a difference between giving money and having a commitment. You know, to me, it's more than, a commitment is more than just giving money. You know, there have been some top management problems, you know, but what's happening now is that In impoverished neighborhoods and people of poverty and IV drug users, something like this happens, you know, the money's mismanaged, they close the doors, and the people in the community are always left holding the bag. You know, that's who's left holding the bag with this, is that there are people in the community, you know. And there's a service that's needed for this community. It's not going to be there. Yeah, you see an article there, they say they got other organizations is going to pick up the slack, but the service that Prevention Works was doing, you know, and I commend these other organizations for trying to pick up the slack, but there's a big need out there, and a population of folks who are IV drug users, who may be HIV infected, that's not going to get service, and this whole city should be concerned about that.
And it says that it's planning on shutting February 25th, so it has not shut yet. In this city, which can find so much money, just think of one deal where there's $272 million in government assistance for the building of the Convention Center Hotel for Marriott. The tally for the baseball stadium, more than $990 million will total be of taxpayer investment into a baseball stadium. And here you're looking at a couple $100,000, it looks like will help shore up prevention works. I don't know the exact numbers. If this money is not invested, it seems like, and Ron Harris, you know a lot about this issue, with the HIV rate so high in the city and so high in particular areas that you're saying prevention works really served, it's not an overstatement to say that this will cost lives.
It will cost lives. And going back to what you were saying about the baseball stadium and the Marriott Hotel, and the five-star hotel they're building with Adams Morgan, this guy gets like a $32 million, you know, tax abatement, you know. And I ask myself, is if they can invest that money in a convention center in Marriott, which has plenty of money, you know, this guy who's building a five-star hotel up in Adams Morgan, I think him and his family are millionaires, almost billionaires or whatever. And you say, and you read that, well, why can't we just take, say, $200,000 of that and show up prevention works and support it? You know, and that goes back to what I said earlier. It makes me wonder about this city's commitment to the population I'm talking about, IV drug users, and a disenfranchised, impoverished community at large. Do they really care? You know, ask myself, do they really care? You know, if they cared about IV drug users and the HIV rate in this city, in which IV drug users is one of the prioritized populations, if they really cared about that, you know, they would be, I believe, they would be more supportive coming forward. If need be, if they talk about the management at Prevention Works, the top management would have problems with that, why don't the city step in and temporarily, if need be, put a management team in place if they really care about this population? I've been told within the last week since this news came out that some of the clients at Prevention Works feel abandoned. What do we do next? And when I worked at Prevention Works, it was the atmosphere created there where folks came there and felt safe. You know, and part of doing that work was part of building trust in people, that they knew that when the unit came out to do needle exchange at Marvin Gaye Park and other parts of the city, that they knew on certain days of the week, at certain times, the unit was going to be there. They knew that, you know. They knew that when life's challenges arose, the people who were, you know, getting case management or care coordinator service, they could come there and feel safe. You know, come there and feel safe, you know. And I don't know, it goes back to what I said earlier, you know, the commitment of this city to the population that I'm talking about.
I interviewed Larry Bryant, another native Washingtonian. He heads up, he's the lead organizer for Housing Works. And he's HIV positive in the front lines of this issue around the country. And he said something along these lines. Look, if we had a vaccine today that would stop all HIV/AIDS in this city and would stop all going forward. But if we did not, that would be great. We'd have no new AIDS cases. But if we did not address the poverty that leads to the epidemic, first crack, now AIDS, then we're just waiting to usher in the next epidemic. And I just want to know if you have any thoughts. I mean, we're talking about a critical issue, getting clean needles to people to slow the spread of HIV/AIDS. But we haven't really touched on the drastic poverty that divides the city.
I hear a lot the term health disparities. And until we start as a city and as a country, excuse me, start dealing with the systemic, I call them root causes, of what fuels these epidemics And the thing that a lot of folks don't want to talk about, you know, and we talk about poverty, but when you talk about poverty, you have to talk about race. You mentioned earlier, Ward 3, west of Rock Creek Park, is predominantly white and richest part of the city. Ward 7 and 8, east of the river, predominantly African American, and highest unemployment rate in Ward 8. I think 1 out of 4 people in east of the river live in poverty. 1 out of 5 kids east of the river live in poverty. So I have to beg myself the question and ask, well, how did that happen? Why does it continue to happen? You know, people cite over and over the high HIV rate east of the river, the high unemployment rate east of the river. Okay, we know all this, you know. We need no more focus groups, no more studies, you know. We know this already. Until we get to the systemic root causes of why is this so, that, you know, it's sort of like, for me, I call it being on a Titanic. You know, the ship is going to sink. The only thing we do is rearrange the seats, you know. So until we deal with these issues, you know, it's going to pop up someplace else some other time with the same issues. So how do we start as a city, then as a country, start dealing with the causes of this poverty, you know, around drug use and around crack cocaine? You know, you have some people out there engaging in this activity. We call it survival sex, you know, to get something to eat, to have some place to sleep. So what does it say about us as a city and as a country that we have folks have to do those kind of things? Now, we're supposed to be the richest country on earth, that folks have to do those kind of things just to have some place to lay their head or to get something to eat. Until we start having a conversation around those issues, you know, I don't think none of these folks affected or infected by HIV. When they were little kids, and you ask little kids what they want to be, I want to be a baseball player when I grow up. I want to be a fireman, policeman, you know, all those kind of things. I don't believe any of them would have said, I want to grow up and be a drug user and have HIV. You know, their choices were limited. Their resources weren't in their communities. And you see the disparity west of the river, west of Rock Creek Park, and then east of the river, and you look at the disparities, and you ask yourself, why? I saw this thing years ago. They had these pins on this map of D.C., and I think they were red pins, and it was just, you know, showing where the HIV was. And west of Rock Creek Park, you saw 1 or 2 pins. But the further you go from, you know, Adams Morgan and Shaw, and the further you start going toward east of the river, the more pins you start seeing, you know. And my challenge is to ask people, why? Why? And then also, with these disparities, it's always communities and peoples of color that the disparities exist in their communities. Housing disparities, income disparities, health disparities, you know, lack of grocery stores. All these things are in communities of color. And I go back to what I said before. I beg to ask someone, have a conversation about why is it so in communities of color.
Reminds me of words from Martin Luther King. He said, why is it that black people have half as many as the good things in life and twice as many as the bad?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it is so many things. A couple of years ago, it was this thing about, you know, the down low with African-American men who were infected in prison and came back home to their partners and infected the community. Well, let's talk about going to jail, going to prison. African-Americans make up 13% of the U.S. population and 60 to 70% of the prison population. Why is that so? And part of it is because of the failed war on drugs policies that started with Richard Nixon has been going on since every other president. You know, for me, the war on drugs is a war on black and brown folks. You know, there are studies that show that just as many Caucasians use or sell drugs in this city as African Americans and Latino.
There was a recent article by Ren Smith, excellent journalist at City Paper, And like you're saying, he said, yeah, blacks and whites use, and this is looking at pot, about the same rate. But if I'm remembering correctly, 91% of the people locked up for marijuana use in the District of Columbia are African American.
True, true. You know, and it goes back to me, the failed policies of the war on drugs. And, you know, it is for me, it's a war on black and brown communities, you know, and talking about these disparities and you know, resources and the like, you know, and then the person get locked up on a marijuana charge and come back to the same community while he's on probation or parole. And it states that, you know, you can't be around certain people or in certain districts, you know, they're called red light districts, but your whole community is a red light district. So the police have free will to stop you at any time they want to, you know, and just a continuum of stuff. I call it like a dog chasing his tail, you know, just keep running round and round in circles, you know. And most people are perception that, yeah, Southeast is a bad community. It's a lot of drugs. They are bad people, that they ought to go to jail. But they smoke marijuana up out the University of Maryland. They smoke marijuana up Georgetown University. They smoke marijuana up GW. Why don't they do drug raids up there? You know, my thing is that, you know, until we start talking about the issues, you know, that I don't think, I heard this story years ago about this guy out in South Central LA. And he said, you know, when I was born here, this community looked like this. Dysfunctional schools, you know, high crime, you know, no grocery stores. It, you know, he said it was like this when I was born. When I got here, it was already like this. Then you come in and send me to jail for being like that. So I had nothing to do with it being like that. It was like that when I got here. So, and then on the other hand, the folks that live up west of Rock Creek Park, they were born in it. You know what I'm saying? That's the way their community looked when they were born, you know? They had nothing to do with it prospering or anything like that. It was like that when they were born into it, you know? So they get the privileges and the benefits of being in a community like that. But east of the river, you punish these folks for them being born in a community like that. And my thing is that until we start having the conversation around these issues about the disparities, income disparities, wealth disparities, health disparities, education disparities, what happened at Prevention Works around HIV, you know, is just a tip of the iceberg. You know, that's a symptom of the cause, but that's not the root cause. That's not the root cause. Until we start dealing with the root causes of all these disparities in our society and in our city, that stuff like this will continue to happen.
Ron Harris, before I get any final thoughts you might have, early in the conversation you mentioned that Prevention Works were one of the earliest at handing out needles and something about a federal ban. Can you explain why the federal government would have a ban on clean needles and needle exchange in the District of Columbia?
The District of Columbia is a federal enclave, which our purse strings are controlled by Congress. All the money we get in the city comes from Congress. Studies starting as far back as 10 years ago stated that IV drug use was one of the main ways of HIV contracting in our communities. Some cities, because they could use state money, they started their own needle exchange because it wasn't federal money. You know, federal government had a stipulation on that. You could not use no federal money for needle exchange. And because all of our money comes from the federal government, we couldn't do it. So a lot of cities, you know, started using state money to start their own needle exchange program. That was one of the reasons why Prevention Works got started and had to spin off from Whitman Walker, because Whitman Walker got federal money. So it started getting donations from concerned community folks, you know, and foundations and folks who cared about the issue. That's why they got all their money. And a couple of years ago, the federal ban was lifted, that the money that DC was getting from the federal government, they could use it to do syringe exchange. But we were so far behind the eight ball than other jurisdictions because they were using their own money to fight needle exchange. And because we were getting federal money, we couldn't use any of our money that D.C. gets from the federal government to fight needle exchange. And the virus was getting up to and beyond epidemic proportion with IV drug users. So we're sort of like playing catch up now.
Because D.C. is not a state, and therefore, as you're saying, as an enclave, it's a colony of some sorts, all the money is federal. And so this federal ban, this lack of statehood, would you say that it costs lives?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. You know, and one of the stipulations they try to put in when they passed the lifted the ban on federal spending, you know, not from 1,000 feet of a school, had a whole lot of other different things. And some folks in this city had mapped it out. And the only place you could have did needle exchange was in the middle of the Potomac River or the Anacostia River. That's how many restrictions they had put on where you could do needle exchange at in this city. And I don't believe right now we understand the ramifications of Prevention Works closing. And I commend the other organizations who are going to try to pick up the slack. But there is such an unseen, voiceless, and that's the way the powers that be want to keep them unseen and voiceless, population out there that need the service that Prevention Works provide. And I don't know if the other organizations right now are up to speed to meet that need.
Any final thoughts you want to share, Ron Harris?
I wish my vision, my dream is that, you know, Dr. King has said one time that we walk down the street and we see a man, you know, begging for money, and we give him a dollar and we feel good about ourselves. But we never ask ourselves, what kind of society is it that he has to be out there begging for a dollar anyway? And so that's my thoughts. You know, what kind of society do we live in that you have a small group of people with so many resources, and then you have a mass of people with no resources? You know, the inequity of it all. And we call ourselves a democracy, you know. There's an Aboriginal activist that said that if you have come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is tied up with mine, let us sit down and talk. So if one of us has HIV, all of us has HIV. If one of us is in jail, and that's about the whole community, all of us in jail. If one of us is unemployed, all of us are unemployed. If one of us is homeless, all of us are homeless. So until we get that concept, we get that mentality that, you know, what happens to my brother, black, white, brown, pink, or green, what happens to him is also affecting and happens to me. You know, that going back to what I said earlier, it's like we're treading water and like a dog chasing his tail. We just continue to go around in a circle, you know, nothing changes and nothing changes.
Reminds me, one more quote from King. I cannot be all that I ought to be until you are all that you ought to be, and you can't be all that you ought to be until I'm all that I ought to be. Thanks, Ron Harris.
Appreciate you talking to me.